Okay, thank you for joining us for the next session. Happy to get going. Once again, I'm Ryan Brinkman, U.S. Automotive Equity Research Analyst at J.P. Morgan, with Yash Beswala on my team. And we're happy to welcome to the stage Jerry Wang, the Global President of startup battery electric vehicle manufacturer, Faraday Future Intelligent Electric. Jerry is gonna walk us through a presentation, including some exciting videos, and then we'll engage in a chat. Thank you, Jerry, for coming to the conference.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ryan. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jerry. I'm the president of Faraday Future. We're a California electric vehicle company, and we're doing amazing cars, which I will share a little bit more detail. Let's start with two This is our first flagship vehicle called FF91, and we're introducing our second vehicle. So here are some more information.
I'm not the most resourceful.
Oh my God.
I'm not the fastest. And I'm not the one in the spotlight. But I won't stop. For our dreams, we take the harder road. For what we love, we stand our ground. In the quiet rhythm of repetition. In the small hours when no one is watching. Through silence and doubt. We try again.
One, two, three, go.
No applause, no spotlight.
Let's go! Let's go!
Just the ones who matter most. Every effort to light up the screen again and again. Because the light lives here inside our hearts. Not to impress others, but to become who we've always dreamed of being. That's why we keep going. Taking every moment to better ourselves. To do a little more. To push a little further, to show up every chance, every stage.
Good to be back.
I rise. Never give up, never give in. Super One FX, for those who refuse to back down.
Yeah, this is our second vehicle, FX Super One. A little bit on the company itself. We are founded in 2014 in California, Los Angeles, by our founder, YT Jia, who is a very successful technology serious entrepreneur who built the best-selling smartphone and smart TV in China. And he was thinking that if he can build the best-selling phone and best-selling TV, why not make car smart? So he has this vision and founded Faraday Future. We become a public company on NASDAQ starting 2021. Historically, we have raised more than $3 billion into this company and you spend most of the fund into the technology development of our vehicle as well as operating system. Our headquarters is in Los Angeles, and we have two brands. So basically, it's a dual brand strategy, similar to Volkswagen and Porsche, right? So it's under the same group, but one is more premium, called Faraday Future or FF, and the second one is more mass volume, more like into the mainstream of the vehicle market, which we call it Faraday X or FX. We have more than 600 patent filed globally, validated by Roland Berger. We have a 1 million square foot manufacturer facility in Hanford, California. This is the overall market segment and the opportunity that we're pursuing. As we can see in here, for the first brand, Faraday Future, we're targeting the top of the pyramid, carving from everything starting 100,000 all the way up to 300,000. And for the second brand, FX, we're covering more mass market volume, capture something starting with 20 to 25,000 all the way up to 100,000. This is the product portfolio under the Faraday Future, the first brand. There's only one car called FF91. And for the second brand, we have a series of products, including Super One, FX9, which will be a hypercar performance, as well as Future 8 or 7, which will be more SUV or sedan type of car, you know, very on the affordable side. This is FF91, our flagship product. It's a very powerful car. As we can see, the horsepower is 1,050. 0 to 60, it's only 2.27 seconds. Mileage per charge, almost 400 miles per charge. It has a tri-motor powertrain system that can support the best vehicle performance. On the user experience side, it's pretty premium as well, very unique. For example, it has 60 reclining angle zero gravity seats. It has a 27 ultra-wide screen Full HD, so basically you can watch, you know, live sports, live game, live events, Netflix, you know, ChatGPT, Zoom, basically do whatever you want inside of the vehicle. You know, we can run ChatGPT. We're the first car who can support Zoom and ChatGPT. On the powered by our own AI technology, both on the computing system, hardware, and the software and operating system. So, for example, we have two Qualcomm 8155 chip and one NVIDIA Orin to support the autonomous driving. We're the first automotive company that partnering with NVIDIA to use their chip and to launch our autonomous driving function. The operation system is based on Android. We fully developed by ourselves, and we invest lots of money and spend lots of time to build everything by ourselves. So the car is a pretty large vehicle on the more premium segment. The wheelbase is 3.2 meter. The length is 5.3 meters, so basically slightly larger than a Rolls Royce. And yeah, it's selling between 100,000 entry level all the way up to 300. Yeah, here are some more photos and product features of the vehicle. This is the interior. We're quite proud. This is very unique digital ecosystem user experience here. So for example, there's a 27-inch foldable display. You can, you know, enjoy all of your content since we do the operation system. So the car knows you very well. Basically, we, you know, if you are a sports fan, it will automatically recommend the game that you like. Or if you're a big, you know, movie movie guide, it will come up with the content favoring your preference. This is some benchmark of the vehicle that we are competing with for our product. You know, I will not go into detail, but basically, not only on the performance side, but also on the user experience, AI, software, digital ecosystem, we are among the best. And competes with other electric vehicles. You know, we're selling slightly higher price compared to some of them, but you know, it's the same no matter on the driving performance as well as the internet connectivity ecosystem experience. We're among the best. So we are, who are the owners, right? We already sold approximately 20 of the vehicle. For example, we're co-creating, or the owners are including Chris Brown, we're partnering with Mariah Carey, we're partnering with Jason Oppenheim, Justin Bell, Kevin Sherman. So basically, the top celebrities, they kind of looking for a car that is unique, but also can meet their expectation, or kind of a unique product that they are looking to purchase, right? So everyone has a Rolls Royce, everyone has a Bentley, right? But what will be a unique vehicle that fits what they are looking for? So FF91 really offers them this great and unique product experience. This is our manufacturing facility in Hanford near Fresno. We invested over $300 million already. We outsource stamping, but we have the full body shop, we have full paint shop, and we have the assembly line as well. This can support up to 10,000 annual capacity for FF91 and up to 30,000 annual capacity for FX, the second vehicle. This is the key leadership team. The founder, YT, who is the co-CEO, we have another co-CEO, Matthias Ant. He has 40-year automotive industry experience, coming previously from Porsche and Magna. And our CFO, Cody, have more than 20 years FP&A experience in Ford. And most of the team in here have been working together for around 10 years. So the team has been really, really robust, and it has great execution capability. So some further insight, you know, I just covered the first brand, but like all the vehicle companies, for them to scale and create value, they have to go into mass volume market. Tesla did it. Tesla first introduced Roadster, then introduced Model S and Model X. But the high volume vehicle that really gave them lots of revenue and profit are Model 3 and Model Y. Similar to us, we are introducing our second brand and the second vehicle, which is a more affordable mass market product, right? And we're doing it in a very, very efficient way, right? So for example, you know, this is the slide that I find very, very interesting. So basically, if we start from the right-hand side first, as we know, China is the largest automotive market globally, selling 25 million vehicles per year, right? And China has a very heavy competition automotive market as well. So for example, as we can see, Tesla, Model Y and Model 3, Tesla is the best-selling car, but there are other cars that is selling similar to Tesla volume. And you have, you know, multiple brands, for example, BYD, you have Xiaomi, Li Auto, NIO, XPeng. You have lots of players in this field that building great product that can compete with Tesla. So that's on the right-hand side, which is China market. On the left-hand side is the United States market. As we can see, this is the second largest automotive market globally, selling 15 million vehicles per year. But actually, the electric vehicle penetration rate is very low, only 10%. And also, Tesla is the best-selling car, Model Y and Model 3. There are no other real competitors giving them challenge. So not on the, you know, not similar to the right-hand side. So, you know, for example, those cars in the blue bar, 17 out of top 20 vehicles are not selling in the United States, right? So one obvious idea would be, why not, you know, why need to reinvent the wheel? Why not partner with some of them, bring one or two products from this list to here? And because it's already, you know, proven in a mature or heavy competition market, and try to capture like 1% or even 0.1%, you will have 1% of the 15 million vehicle market would be 150,000. Even 0.1% is 15,000. It can create tremendous value. And that's what we're doing right now. I will skip this slide. So basically, we are using this method. We're partnering with two very large China OEM, and each of them are manufacturing millions of cars already. And we are tapping into the blue ocean market in the United States. For example, we're not only bringing the full electric vehicle, but also we're bringing the range-extended hybrid vehicle. We're giving the best AI cabin experience on the digital ecosystem. We're targeting sub 40,000 AI EVs. So basically, if you only have like 30 to 35,000 budget, there's no good vehicle, electric vehicle, that you can purchase inside of this market. And we're capturing the luxury MPV or luxury minivan market as well. This is the FX Super One that we launched in several weeks ago. And we already received more than 10,000 paid reservations. The market loved this product a lot. It competes with Cadillac Escalade, and the selling price is only approximately half of the price. It's a full-size SUV, and we call it MPV, super comfortable, luxury, both the interior and exterior, and giving a very good user experience. Those are the two editions of the vehicle. Here are some more design. We're introducing a EAI super face. Basically, you can choose to have it or not to have it, and you can demonstrate the video or any photo that you'd like. Since that's a very unique feature. This is the interior space. As we can see, there are 4-seater, 6-seater, and 7-seater. Versions, and it can fit lots of user real case user need, and both the second row and the third row are captain chair, so very super comfortable, and offers zero gravity function as well. This is the production roadmap or the key milestones what we are doing for the Super One. We have already received more than 10,000 reservations, and we plan to launch by the end of Q3 or early Q4 in UAE, in Middle East first, since that we have a manufacturer facility, small manufacturer facility, and their homologation requirement is more friendly compared to the United States. And by the end of this year, we're doing homologation already for this vehicle. We already get homologation complete for the first vehicle, FM91, and we're doing it for the second vehicle, FX. And we plan to have the first vehicle roll off the manufacturer facility by end of this year. this is some financial slides. We're still a very small company, although the stock performance in the past few weeks has been pretty good. But we're still very small, only 250 million in market cap. Not similar to other successful company at this slide. But one company that I'd like to highlight is Lucid. So if we're familiar with Lucid Financial, for example, last year, Lucid is selling less than 10,000 vehicles. They have an operating loss of $3 billion, and their valuation is still having $6 to $7 billion. And the next similar company that we're familiar is Rivian. It have a market cap of something around 15 to 20 billion, but Faraday only have 250 million, right? So if we can successfully pull this one off and just capturing like 0.1% market share of the overall automotive market opportunity in the United States, we firmly believe that we can really create some significant value, or at least offering some very unique product feature to the U.S. consumers. We are running our business very efficient. This is the 12-month cash burn in the year of 2024. As we can see in here, some of the company are no longer existing, but we are running our business very efficiently, burning only less than $80 million for the full year. This is our stock performance. We have lots of retail following us. Last year it was quite amazing experience. The stock was it was up 100 times in like 10 trading days. And for this year, when we do the announcement, as well as continue to introduce more development of the second brand or the second vehicle, the market reacts are very, very positive. And the volume is quite high. So the single daily trading, peak trading volume was 3 billion. And right now it's stable around like 50 to 100 million per single trading day. Yeah, that's it on the company introduction. Happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Jerry. I'll start off with a few questions. And first of all, I think it's very interesting.
Thank you.
And you know, we've seen this over the past year or so, a lot of articles in the US in mainstream publications saying the best EV that you cannot buy, right? Mm-hmm. And highlighting various different Chinese EVs and talking about the price points. And I think Americans who are aware have been sort of shocked that you can buy in China an EV that goes 500 miles and costs $30,000 and looks
absolutely.
Like a Ferrari.
Absolutely.
maybe referring to Xiaomi Su7,
YU7
now too. So I think it's interesting. And it seems to be contingent, though, upon the regulatory environment.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I were just chatting before you took the stage about the tariff rate that is applied to semi-knockdown or completely knockdown vehicles coming from China, because the tariff on Chinese vehicles wholly is 100%.
100%.
And I think that would be untenable. I mean,
mm-hmm.
And so maybe you can just talk about what's giving you the confidence. You say you're importing vehicles right now paying
25%.
As your attention is raised, do you become a target? What's sort of your confidence that you might be able to pay this reasonable rate?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're following the industrial development train that is very highly supportive by the current administration. So basically to promote the high-end manufacturing coming back to the United States. One of the largest high-end manufacturing industry is definitely automotive, building cars, right? So we are, we're a California company, we're hiring, hundreds of people, and we are expanding our facility to capture this great opportunity. So we are creating jobs, we're creating value, we are bringing good, affordable products to United States and make it available for consumer to choose, right? So, overall, we think that we are following the, creating, meaningful value and following the development direction that the current government is promoting. And actually, we had a quite successful event in D.C. several weeks ago. We met with Congress members and introducing what we're doing, brought two vehicles there. And all of them are, spoke highly of the business and really want us to expand more facility in their state. So in general, we feel that, the tariff situation will be slightly eased, the different rate from the complete vehicle and automotive parts will be there.
Yeah, I think it's a strong argument. I think that the fair and logically sound argument does not always win the day when it comes to politics.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to ask too on your willingness to potentially consider not branding the vehicle mm-hmm. under your own brand. I imagine there might be some automakers in China that would like to sell their vehicles in the U.S., but mm-hmm. maybe control the brand still. Is that something that you would ever consider essentially being like a contract, CKD assembler in the way that Magna Steyr is for complete vehicles?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. I would slightly pivot that. We are definitely, open for opportunities. That's for sure. But actually, when I introduced those vehicles are selling very, very well in China, but why not they're not able to bring it to here? At least three hurdles. They're not able to do it by themselves. They have lots of money, for example, BYD, and they can open a facility, spend billions of dollars building in here and then bring vehicle in here. But why they're not doing it? The market is just great, right? So there are at least three reasons really differentiate Faraday. So first, we already discussed, we have, you know, you need to have a manufacturing facility. No matter how much or how less that you're doing manufacture, the car needs to be built in here in order to enjoy a favorable tariff treatment. So that's one thing. You know, it takes us 10 years, $300 million to build a facility in California. So it takes a lot of money and take a lot of time. And second is on the vehicle software. So the current administration is banning China vehicle software starting from 2027. And all the players, you know, are trying to figure it out, how to handle it. So my point is that even, for example, BYD build a facility, spend billions of dollars, they need to develop their own software all in the United States as well. So this will take them lots of time and lots of money to do so. And the third, you captured very, very right. It's a brand, sell, after sale service, and user operation, right? So for those large OEMs, they're coming into here. They want to capture, definitely want to capture some meaningful volume. Then probably, I mean, you know, the best way of them doing it is to create their own brand instead of using their existing brand and introduce a, you know, China vehicle to United States, especially given the current political environment right now.
Would you say that you ironically benefit from the scrapping of the $7,500 U.S. federal consumer tax credit, mm-hmm. because that was widely seen as a non-tariff trade barrier mm-hmm. that you would not have qualified for? Anyways, it evens the playing field a bit, would you say?
Yes. So the $75,000, as long as that you are, you know, building cars in here, you can enjoy half of that. And you are purchasing batteries from here, you can enjoy the other half of that.
Wanted to ask about homologation costs.
Of course.
Firstly, you have gotten one of your FX vehicles through homologation, so you should be familiar with this.
Yeah.
Obviously, the more vehicles that you sell, the more you can amortize those homologation costs. But you know, when people would push back on that, well, you really wouldn't be able to buy a $30,000, you know, Chevy because of all the transportation costs. Then you throw in the homologation, and one thing that I think your van offers that's very interesting is the zero gravity seat, which the American consumer does not have experience of, and it's like flying business class, but in your car. But there's some concern even in China about that meeting, you know, new regulations mm-hmm. and whatnot, and some of our seating and airbag companies are working on solutions for that, but it's a little bit out and kind of expensive, and mm-hmm. Just curious if that would be possible to sell in the U.S. and what your discussions with the regulators around homologation for that vehicle with the zero gravity seats may
absolutely
like.
Yeah. First, the answer is yes. We are able to do it, and in fact, we are selling zero gravity seats in FF91, you know, as of now, and it's completely past the homologation. So we already did it, and we understand how to do it. But that's an excellent question. Like passing homologation for zero gravity seat is it's very, very difficult. Yeah, we spend lots of money and we spend lots of time trying to get that done. So for example, you know, not only the safety belt, but the buckle, like the structure that support the safety belt, you know, we failed at the first time because of the crush test, and because of the unique design of the seat, the buckle, like, you know, went loose, and then we did not pass at the first time. So we changed another design and fit in a stronger material in order to, you know, completely pass all the homologation requirement. And definitely the homologation requirement under the US is the most strict around global. But so it takes lots of effort and lots of know-how and knowledge to go through it. But basically once you get it down, you know how to do it. And the more important thing is that this will offer consumers the most safest product and experience that they can have on driving the car. So it's definitely worth it.
One thing I kind of like about your business model is it is de-risked in a way that Fisker was not. I mean, they had all massive cost overruns. Lucid, you see, they lose so much money. You know, the vehicle cost is, you know what it is. You know what, let's say Great Wall is charging you for this van. And you know what the tariff costs are and the homologation. And you know what your assembly costs are and your market. What kind of starting with that $60,000 price and what the van would be sold to you for, and considering your semi-assembly fees, what kind of margin would you target there?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're targeting something around 15% contribution margin, and we think it's definitely very much achievable. And here's why, right? So in general, for the same vehicle, the cost, or the MSRP in China or the MSRP in US, you know, kind of similar standard vehicle, is double compared to the MSRP in China. That's how like strong competition China is, but that's how advanced the electric vehicle supply chain is and cost efficient the manufacturing and supply chain is in China. So basically you have 100% room for margin, right? So if you take 25 off from the tariff on the automotive parts, you take another 25% off from the shipping logistic cost, so on and so forth. And basically your distribution and your dealer margin, so on and so forth, is another 20%. So you still have a very healthy around 30% margin room for execution. Right, and you're taking some of your marketing, promotion, maintenance, you know, cost of warranty, cost of, so basically a 15% gross contribution margin target is very much achievable under this model.
Now, you said that you're working with two large Chinese OEMs, and you also said that they currently sell millions of vehicles.
Yes.
One we know to be a Great Wall. The other is not Great Wall. Li Auto, which sells plug-in hybrids, does not sell millions of vehicles. There's a pretty short list here. If you say you're going to sell for $40,000, if you're going to have a 15% gross margin, that means you need to buy it. Your total cost needs to be about $35,000.
Yes.
And considering, that also includes the cost to assemble the vehicle, to transport the vehicle.
Yep.
So really, you know, the purchase price from the Chinese automaker might be like $30,000. And, you know, I don't know, it sounds like a BYD vehicle to me. What kind of vehicle do you think, or would it be reasonable to assume that this is? And what kind of volume potential would a vehicle like that have in the U.S., do you think?
Yeah. Basically, you know, it depends on the MSRP range. So, for example, for the Super One, the large full-size SUV, we have like three versions: the entry level, the mainstream one, as well as a more luxury one. So, it's all combined. We're targeting of something around 50,000 to 100,000 volume, and we try to get there like step by step. So again, we're not trying to sell like millions of cars in the next 5 or 10 years and become, you know, second player following Tesla. That's not what we're trying to do. We wanted to be efficient. We wanted to, you know, making steady progress step by step, and gradually, you know, we're going to get there. But, you know, using very light asset or light investment. So think of that. The vehicle has already been built. Right, we're making it better by our software, by, you know, passing homologation. There's a lot of design engineering change, but the core product is already developed, and they're, you know, manufacturing and selling millions of vehicles right now. Right, so by partnering with those great partners, not only that we can, you know, have a very robust product that is market proven, but also you know, we can enjoy their supply chain cost. Right, we can enjoy their purchase price. We can enjoy their manufacturing cost. We can enjoy their quality control. And by, you know, making this product better using the capability that we are adding, using the value that we're adding on to that. And actually, there is a, you know, like a supply chain tax rebate. So basically, there is a 12% value added tax in China. So if you purchase from a local supplier and you sell the end product in China, they're paying 12%. But if the end product is not selling in China, you bring it outside, basically there's a 12% tax rebate that the OEM can get. So basically that's a very, even they're selling those parts at the same cost of their manufacturing, they're getting 12% pure margin, pure profit. So it's a very like interesting business model for them to consider. And especially considering the heavy competition is going on in China, like Xiaomi, Huawei, BYD. Everyone is launching their cars, and all the cars are products are amazing. So basically, their margin is relatively low. By partnering with guys like us, you know, they can enjoy basically 12% by almost doing nothing. Right? They're manufacturing millions of vehicles already. So what does it make, you know, to manufacture another 50,000 or something?
Yeah, sure.
So very efficient.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you upon the UAE strategy that you laid out. Like, is there any particular partner that you've tied up with? Is the plant over there similar to the California Hartford plant with a semi-knockdown assembly? And are there any key advantages to choosing that market to go into first?
Of course, yeah. So first of all, we're partnering with Ras Al Khaimah, so basically a smaller Emirates in UAE. And one of our strategic investors is Sheikh Abdullah Al Qasimi, from the ruling family. And with his support, we already secured a manufacturer facility in Ras Al Khaimah Economic Development Zone. And as we know, the UAE are, you know, very much promoting manufacturing high-end AI technology, automotive business there as well, right? So they're giving not only giving great incentive, great support, but also that they are slightly lowering the bar of the homologation requirement in that market. So basically, if you're selling less than 100 vehicle, you know, more or less around less than 100 vehicle per product, you are not needed. As long as you manufacture in UAE, there's no homologation or very light homologation requirement. But that product is a mature product, right? So we're going to make sure the quality is great, and then we start to deliver. But the speed and execution of delivering in UAE is, you know, much faster, and the certainty is, you know, significantly high compared to passing the whole homologation in the United States. We're able to make it. We will make it, but this takes slightly longer than, you know, starting manufacturing in UAE.
Are there any questions in the audience? You know, one thing that's interesting about UAE is, you know, it's not very big. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can drive the vehicle from one part of the country to the other and find service. But in the United States, you know, it's a big country, and you'd almost have to, because of the fixed investment and the dealership, the distribution, you have to kind of limit yourself to a sub-geography. How do you plan to handle the distribution and be able to scale it in an efficient way? And I almost wonder if a good alternative without investment in distribution would be to sell to fleet customers. And I don't know that a government would necessarily buy a Chinese-type rebranded vehicle, but a corporate, a rental, something like that, where they're taking care of the refueling and the service and the things of that sort.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's a great question. I think the key is the product performance, right? Are you really offering a product that is reasonably priced, but also offer like premium exclusive features and experience, no matter from the driving side or from the seating side or from the digital ecosystem side? What kind of unique experience that you are offering with your product will determine on whether customer would like to buy it or not. So again, we're targeting a 50 million market, a 50 million vehicle market, which is a lot, right? And on your sales and distribution, that's a great point as well. From our strategy, we're focusing mostly all the transactions are completely online. So we're building our online platform and, you know, to facilitate all the vehicle transactions. On the offline, we just built a very few flagship stores, maybe, you know, 2 or 3 in the United States. We're not trying to create like hundreds of stores. It's very, very expensive, right? But, you know, how we capture the offline, for example, sales activities or sales and maintenance activities, you know, by we're partnering with offline institutions or offline stores, so giving them a product that they can have user to experience it, they can test drive, basically come and see, and wherever the order that we're getting online, for example, it has a zip code, and for, you know, some offline partners, we will direct those online interests to the region that you cover.
What kind of offline partners would these be, like franchise dealers?
Yeah, franchise dealers. Yeah, franchise dealers. Some of the you know, large automotive, no matter on the new car dealer or used car dealers, and some of them, for example, the first dealership that we signed, or dealership partner that we signed in New York, is a used car dealer. You know, they have 2 stores. They're taking care of the maintenance as well, but also, you know, they signed for 1,000 FX. Vehicle, also that they try to develop their own fleet. So they're saying that this product offers very, very unique you know, seating experience that no other product, similar product, at least similar to the price range, can offer. So they're considering of purchasing like 500, 700 of them and applying to, for example, Uber Black or something. So that there's a very healthy model that they can enjoy a slightly lower MSRP cost, but come with steady cash flow.
I did ride from the Shanghai Pudong Airport to the Shangri-La Hotel in a Zeekr with a zero gravity seat.
Yeah.
It was silent and smooth
and
very relaxing after my non-business class flight into Shanghai. So I could
definitely
say executive transport.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah, and I mean, you know, ordering premium vehicle experience in Uber is kind of expensive, right? $100, $150, $200. So basically, as long as we can build the product and able to start delivering and you know, gradually scale up, there's tremendous opportunity.
Well, very good. We are over time, so please join me in thanking Jerry for the great color and insight.
Thank you.